Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I want to mourn the old trees and tell them that we love them.
I've looked at clear cuts and burnt forest and I've felt outraged. Ah!
We are the crowning glory of God's creation, and all of nature was made for us. Nature is more productive because of us, not less.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
So, you've got yourself a prodigal, do ya? This is Wretched Radio. Nothing, I suspect, nothing is more heartbreaking than a child who wanders away from the truth. Isn't that what John tells us? There's no greater joy than to see children walking in the truth. And when one of yours goes wayward, wow, is that heartbreaking. The question then becomes, how now do you treat that child? And some of the complexity of answering that question, I think, is wound up in what is the child doing? What lifestyle has the child chosen? Drugs, alcohol, the party lifestyle, hooking up, homosexuality. That happens more than I think most of us imagine. How does the parent treat that child? So over the weekend, when I was just reading through stacks and stacks of stuff, in between fasting and praying, of course, and my 64 hours of daily private quiet time, was reading an old article. This goes back to 2007. Abraham Piper, the last name rings a bell. It's John's son, and if I'm not mistaken, Abraham Piper, he was a bit wayward himself. I think he's come back to the reservation, but he used to be, I think, a little bit wayward himself. And he wrote 12 Ways to Love Your Wayward Child. If you don't think that this is going to apply to you because, well, I don't have a wayward child. Perhaps not yet. Perhaps they haven't gone through the season where they are trying to figure out things on their own for themselves. And even a child who doesn't go wayward outwardly can go wayward in their heart. The question is, how do we treat the child who is being belligerent, who is pushing you away, and who's pushing the church away? Your mileage may vary, but I think that some of this will apply to you also. Let's jump in, shall we? Rule number one, if you got yourself a prodigal, and this is, you're going to go, oh, well, that's just such a Sunday school answer. Yeah, that doesn't mean it isn't true, though. And this is the one rule that will guide all of the other pieces of advice from Abraham Piper. This is the linchpin, because this is the goal. What does it profit a mom or dad if their child is a 4.0, graduates with the Magna Carta, Laude? Clearly, I wasn't one of those people. Who cares if they are the valedictorian? But they don't love Jesus. And that is why rule number one is point them to Christ. Point them to Christ. And when you're done pointing them to Jesus Christ, point them to Christ some more. Their danger that they are presently in is not sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Not laziness. Not crime. Not cussing or covetousness or slovenliness. They're just lazy and won't get off the couch. Right, I know. That gets up your... I get that. They're just not being very productive. Right. So let's say that they become more industrious than Steve Jobs, but they die and go to hell. It doesn't mean that these issues aren't worth addressing. It doesn't mean that they have no significance, but isn't the big enchilada that they will die, go to heaven, and spend eternity with Jesus and you? So point them to Christ. That is their problem. Remember, our brains are busted because our believing is wonky. And this is so counterintuitive to the way the world thinks. You got to fix their thinking. Just get their thinking right, and then they'll believe right. Not according to the Bible. The Bible says faith comes first, and I can demonstrate that with a rather trite analogy. Aren't almost all of them exactly that? But if I told you, hey, I put $10 million into your bank account, what would you do? All right, let's role play, because we did this in rehearsal already. Joey, Yes. I put $10 million into your bank account. What are you going to do?
No, you didn't. Really?
What are you going to do?
I'm going to go out and buy a yacht. Or two.
All right.
An island. I'm going to buy my own island like Phil Collins. All righty.
Somebody's been watching a little too much HGTV. All right. If you believe me, you'd react and you'd start going, oh, fantasizing about all the things I'm going to do with all that cash. And your imagination would run wild. It would make you happy. And then I think it would also cause you to act. You'd probably skedaddle to that bank to withdraw the money to start using it. But what came first? You believe me. Or you don't believe me and you don't do nothing. It doesn't affect your emotions. Let's take the analogy a step further. So you believe me that I put $10 million into your bank account, all excited, you're imagining a yacht, you're going to live on an island with Phil Collins. I don't know how he got involved in this. Just another day in paradise for both of you. You get to the bank and you're informed, what? Not only do you not have $10 million in the bank, you're $50 million in debt. Boom. What happened? Well, I made you a promise. You imagined it. It gave you joy. You acted on the promise. And then I pulled the football out from underneath you and you landed flat on your back. And now you're miserable and mad. And that's what the world does to us. It lies. It gives us a deceptive system. Believe this. Do this. Act on this. Don't worry. You'll be happy. And then you act on the promises that can't possibly deliver. And you land it flat on your back. And the world tells you, well, just try harder next time. That's because you were believing lies. When you believe the truth, then your thinking is affected. Then your emotions change. Then your actions go in a different direction. But believing must come first. And the same thing is true with your wayward child. They need faith first. All of the other issues will get cleaned up progressively once they believe right. Number two, this won't shock you, for your wayward child, pray like a nobody's business. Number three, acknowledge something is wrong. It's okay. Don't ignore it. Pretend it doesn't exist. Holidays might be easier, but your child's eternity won't. So keep your eyes focused on Christ. Now, I think we need to be mindful. That doesn't mean every opportunity you sneak it in. Hey, Mom, can I have more of that dressing? You know, you'll be dressed in robes of righteousness for all of eternity. You don't need to be constantly on it, but you do need to be mindful to keep your eye on the prize. Number four, don't expect them to be Christ-like. They can't. A pagan can only act like a pagan. You might say, well, I know you're struggling with believing in Jesus, but can't you at least admit that getting wasted every day is a sin? Well, they can admit it. It's not going to change anything. Their unbelief is the most dangerous problem that they have. It's not the drinking, really. No matter how your child's unbelief manifests itself, always be sure to focus more on the heart sickness than its symptoms. Number five. Here's one that might cause you a little consternation. I looked up that word before the program began. Number five, welcome them home. What? What? From Abraham Piper. If your daughter smells like weed or an ashtray, spray her jacket with Febreze and change the sheets when she leaves, but let her come home. If you find out she's pregnant, buy her vitamins, take her to her 20-week ultrasound, protect her from Planned Parenthood, and by all means, let her come home. If your son is broke because he spent all the money you lent him on loose women and ritzy liquor, sound familiar? Let him come home. If he hasn't been around for a week and a half because he's been staying at his girlfriend or boyfriend's apartment, plead with him not to go back and let him come home. Yes, there are rules. They can't infect the younger kids. They can't be doing the sinful activities in your home. But if you don't let them come home when they're ready to come home, if God works on their hearts and changes them, they won't want to come home unless they know they're welcome at home. Number six, plead with them more than you rebuke them. Carping doesn't usually get the job done. Number seven, connect them to believers who have better access to them. If you can, your child won't listen to you Will the child maybe listen to somebody else they think is hipper, cooler, more relevant, whatever? Try to connect them to believers who can talk some sense into them. Try to R-E-S-P-E-C-T their friends. You say, but they're so bad for my son. Yeah, and your son is so bad for them. How's about them apples? So when your son, daughter shows up with a bad friend, look, there's somebody's wayward child too. Love on them, just like you'd like your child loved on by another Christian who welcomed your child into their home. Number 9, email them. Stay in touch. 10, take them to lunch. 11, take interest in their pursuits. And number 12, this harkens back to rule number 1 for your wayward child. Point them to Christ. No strategy, writes Young Piper, for reaching your son or daughter will have any lasting effect if the underlying goal isn't to help them know Jesus. Painful? Yeah. Watching your prodigal ram their head against the wall, do themselves harm, end up in a bad place? Awfully painful. But mom or dad, those are the least of their and your worries. The big worry, the big concern, the state of their soul. So if you've got yourself a wayward or a prodigal, or your child is living at home and appears to be just sweet as cream, keep pointing them to Christ. This is Wretched Radio. Ultrasound machines save lives. Don't believe me? Then believe Dan Steiner of preborn.org.
A young woman come in, 18, with a boyfriend, and he's pushing her to abort, took him back into the ultrasound room. There's two hearts here. It's twins. The father looks at that, this 19-year-old guy. He goes, I don't know what we're going to do, but I know what we're not going to do. We're not going to kill those two babies.
Ultrasounds work. When a mommy, a daddy sees a picture of their baby in the womb, 80% of the time they choose life. It is $28 per ultrasound. May I ask, how many ultrasounds could you provide? $28 per month. Please note, whilst Preborn is busy trying to save the lives of babies, they're trying to save the souls of mommies and daddies by preaching the gospel. Please consider supporting Preborn at preborn.org/wretched, preborn.org/wretched.
Thank you very much for joining us today at Wretched Radio. If you have a wretched story you could share with us, we would love to hear it. idea@wretched.org, if you would be so kind. For example, Quentin from Texas sent us a note that said, just wanted to say thank you all for the ministry and everything you all do. Yep, he's from Texas. I watch Wretched on YouTube just about every day. Want to specifically say how great and powerful the little book Don't Stub Your Toe is. It's a great gospel presentation. So now I hand them out everywhere and to everyone. God bless you all from Texas, Quentin. If you would like to share your story, idea@wretched.org. We would love to hear it. And if you would like to help make more stories like these possible, we'd love that too. Would you consider today becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner? Go to wretched.org/donate for all the details. wretched.org/donate. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Please, would you please consider sending as many Bibles as you can through Bible League International to the persecuted church.
Aria was raised in a strict Muslim family. A woman invited her to a Bible study. She accepted Jesus as Lord and Savior. She took her Arabic New Testament home. She hid it. Her mother was rummaging through the house, found this, gave it to her father. He called the authorities to report her as an infidel. They tortured her, did the same thing to the Christian friend. These two women have been instrumental through their suffering to lead about 50 people to Christ.
And they would love a Bible. Would you please consider sending as many as you are able to through Bible League International? $5 for a Bible to a persecuted Christian. Perhaps 6 per month? Wretched.org/Bible, wretched.org/Bible.
Attributes of God. The Bible tells us of God's faithfulness. Since God is truth, He has no desire to break His promises. Since He is omnipotent, nothing can cause Him to break promises. Since His promises are based on His eternal plan, God will always keep them. Scripture called God a rock, a fortress, and a bulwark. never failing because he is faithful. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Is it possible evangelicalism is about to go back in time with our... Without Huey Lewis, this is... No, I'm not proud of the 80s references. I'm really not. But they just... They're just so there on the surface. And sometimes... What was that movie back in... It was Back to the Future. Part one, everybody loved it. Part two, eh. Part three, sort of should have quit after number two.
No.
Really. What?
Don't number two's decent and number three's a lot of fun.
A lot of fun.
Yes, I enjoyed all three of them. There.
Wow.
Said it.
So
I'm not ashamed.
So you're the one on Rotten Tomatoes who gave it the good grade. Well, now we've...
And my friends.
That mystery solved, three of you right there. Let's go back in time, potentially. Maybe that is precisely where we are going in evangelicalism. Do you remember maybe watching a movie, something better than Back to the Future Part 3 from, say... The 50s. Eve, wait a second. I'm not endorsing this movie. I saw it before I was saved. I'm certain of that. I'm sure it cannot possibly be good because I remember the premise of the movie annoying me even then. Back in the 80s, Footloose. Remember the tough kid or Kevin Bacon? They come to town and there's this stodgy preacher.
John Lithgow.
And how does he preach? Kind of the old puritanical style, all dour, and he's all hell and brimstone and mean kind of preacher. That's the way he's portrayed. And then, of course, he changes his tune at the end. Even back in the 80s, that's how we portrayed preachers. In the 50s, most certainly so. Go back to the 1650s, 1750s, and not only the style of preaching, but the contents of preaching radically different. And I'd like to demonstrate that because I cannot help but wonder if it's time to consider going back. Not to that standoffish style where the pastor seems to be talking down from a mountain. I'm not talking about that. I still love the oratory of the evangelical style. Not that, hey, casual church thing, but preaching in a regular voice, not this pushed and forced thing that so often preachers used to do. I'm talking about the contents. Why did we change so much of the contents of our preaching? Why did it used to be more, not entirely the Puritans preached sweet about Jesus, but why was there more talk about hell? Why was there more talk about judgment? Why was there a gospel presentation that wasn't all squishy like, oh, you know, just ask, oh, he just, don't you want to be loved? So raise your hand. They preached with fervor. I think culture has more of an impact on the pulpit than we realize. And I wonder, just wonder, if we might soon be getting to a time where our culture helps us to return back to the style and the contents of preaching that used to have more to it. Was reading a booklet. This is Free Grace Broadcaster. Issue 203. Subject, repentance. Samuel Davies lived between the years 1723 and 1761. This is a sermon based on, this is 2 Thessalonians 1:7, and I think it's also, hark, Paul is using similar language in Romans chapter 2, that Jesus Christ is going to return with his mighty angels in flaming fire, pouring out retribution, wrath on everyone who refuses to repent, who practices evil deeds, and lives for themselves. There'll be trouble and calamity on that day. Here's his sermon. Now the judges come. The judgment seat is erected. The dead are raised. Why the universal convention? What a vast assembly is this. Adam beholds the long line of his posterity, and they behold their common father. In that large, prodigious assembly, my brethren, you and I must mingle. We shall not be lost in the crowd, nor escape the notice of our judge. His eye will be as particularly fixed on every one as though there were not but one before him. He's painting a picture, isn't he? I wonder if our world needs to hear more of this. I wonder if we need to hear more of this. Now the judge is seated. Anxious millions stand before him, waiting for their doom. As yet, there's no separation made between them, but see... At the order of the judge, the crowd is all in motion. They part. They sort together according to their character and divide to the right and left. Oh, what a strange separation. What multitudes that once ranked among the saints and were highly esteemed for their piety by others, as well as themselves, are now banished from among them and placed with the trembling criminals upon the left hand. And how many poor, honest-hearted, desponding souls whose foreboding fears had often placed them there now find themselves, to their agreeable surprise, stationed on the right hand of their judge, who smiles upon them. Let that be a good word to you, knee-knocking saint. What connections are now broken, what hearts torn asunder, what intimate companions, what dear relations parted forever. Neighbor from neighbor, masters from servants, friend from friend, parents from children, husband from wife. For who are those miserable multitudes on the left? I see the drunkard, the swearer, the whoremonger, the liar, the defrauder. You better not tweet that if you're a football, soccer, rugby player in Australia. I see the drunkard. I see the various classes of profane sinners. There I see the families that call upon the name of the Lord, the whole and whole nations that forget him. And oh, what vast multitudes, what millions of millions of millions of millions do all these make? And then he talks about those who are on the right. But now the trial begins. All the works of the sons of men will then be tried. What strange discoveries will this trial make? What noble dispositions that never shone in full beauty to mortal eyes. What pious and noble actions concealed under the veil of modesty. What devout exercises of heart that lay upon only the eyes of the omniscience are now brought full into the light to receive reward of the supreme judge before the assembled universe. I can't wait for my 82 hours of daily private quiet time to be brought into the light like that for my reward. But on the other hand, what works of shame and darkness, what hidden things of dishonesty, what dire secrets of treachery, hypocrisy, lewdness, various forms of wickedness artfully and industriously concealed from human sight, what horrid exploits of sin now burst to light in all their hellish colors to the confusion of the guilty and the astonishment and horror of the universe. May not the prospect of such a discovery fill some of you with horror? Remember, he's preaching to his congregation. This is preaching to the saints and to the unregenerated sinners alike. How would it confound you if you were now all published, even in the small circle of your acquaintance? How then can you bear to have them all fully exposed before God, angels, and men? We are now come to the grand crisis upon which the eternal states of all mankind turn. This is the sentencing time. Another sentence breaks from the mouth of the angry judge. He welcomes those into his kingdom and then vengeful thunder. Nature gives a deep, tremendous groan. The heavens lower and gather blackness. The earth trembles and guilty millions, dare I say billions, sink and gather blackness at the horror of the sound. And see, he whose words are works, whose fist produced worlds out of nothing, he who could remand 10,000 worlds into nothing at a frown, he whose thunder quelled the insurrection of rebel angels in heaven and hurled them headlong down, down, down to the dungeon of hell, see, he turns to the guilty crowd on his left hand. His countenance discovers the righteous indignation that glows in his breast. There is no room now for prayer and tears. Now the sweet, mild, mediatorial hour is past, and nothing appears but the majesty and terror of the judge. Who can bear the sound? He speaks. Depart from me, you cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. The cutting emphasis of every word, depart from me, the author of all good, the fountain of all happiness. Depart with all my heavy, all-consuming curse upon you. Depart into fire, into everlasting fire, prepared, furnished with fuel, and blown up into rage, prepared for the devil and his angels. You heard a sermon like that lately? Have you heard one that labors that long to cause people to have fear, which is the beginning of wisdom? I wonder, in our world where sin is poo-pooed, it's downplayed, God, just there, I was flipping by on the TV and there was some show, I don't know on what network, portraying God as this doddering, white-haired old fool. Maybe it's time to start lifting him up, exalting his laws and his precepts, and reminding people that they do not die and slip into hell. They are judged and cast into hell by an all-consuming fire. Maybe, just maybe, it is time for us to Huey Lewis and go back in time and start preaching like that. This is Wretched Radio.
Know your church fathers. Hippolytus was perhaps the most important theologian of the 3rd century. He wrote a 10-volume book called Refutation of All Heresies, which catalogued and criticised hundreds of pagan philosophies, Gnostic teachings, and Christian heresies. Hippolytus was exiled and died a martyr under the Roman Empire. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The thrill of victory and the agony of defeat.
Spanning the globe to bring you a bunch of articles that I read. They don't really fit with much else, but if you put them together in a pile, play a theme song to try to persuade people it's actually more organized than it really is and call it Wide World of Christian Stories, well, then you got yourself some Christian radio right there. Don't be the judge of that, Todd. This is Wretched Radio. Let's span the globe all the way to South Carolina, shall we? One of the prettiest states you will ever visit. I am telling you, if you're looking for a little road trip or a long trip, get yourself to South Carolina. It is beautiful. I do have one lament about South Carolina, however. The trees. You think that you're going to see some of the beautiful scenery when you're driving around South Carolina. There are so many trees when you're on the freeways, the highways. All you see is trees. So get off of them main roads and start driving through the hills and the valleys. Oh, lovely, lovely, loverly. And no state taxes. What else could a Christian ask for in South Carolina? Shout out to all of the stations, His Radio, that are now airing Wretched Radio in South Carolina. Welcome. It is a joy to be on your radio station. Sure hope I can get to visit sometime. There's just about every place. I haven't been to a place in South Carolina I don't like. I'm sure there's some place. I just haven't found it yet. Greenville, wow. The state capital, lovely. Charleston, can you beat that? Well, you know what you can beat about Charleston? The price. Oh, the cost of living in the Charleston. Hoy, it's something else. Besides that, thrilled to pieces to be on. Hope to get to visit sometime soon. South Carolina. By the way, this is how pathetic our life is. For our wedding anniversary, we go to Greenville, South Carolina every year, and we watch college football in the hotel lobby. That's pretty much our big deal. Right there. Friel, we knew it was pathetic. We just didn't know it was that bad. Welcome, His Radio. Let's go to, well, I guess it would be the University of Chicago, the Pritzker School of Medicine. Haven't heard of it, but that doesn't make no, never mind. Fox News, this is a statistic. It should shock us. It probably isn't going to surprise you, but it should really bum us out. 22% of millennials feel like they have no friends. That's just bonkers. 22%. They have no friends. They have got social media coming out of their ears, and yet they have no friends. They've got friends on Facebook, Instagram followers. They get likes, they get hits, they get views, whatever it is that the kids do with their machines these days. And they feel alone. They're the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner is what they are. alone in a social media sea, and nobody seems to be taking pity on their souls in agony, the Christian church stands ready to say, hey, would you like to try something? It's going to sound crazy, but human relationships, this is one of the subjects that I'm writing about. I'm thrilled to pieces. I actually finished up 13 Reasons Why You Should Not Commit Suicide. Worked on that a lot over the weekend. Finished it up. One of the reasons that so many people are citing for being depressed and taking their life, loneliness. They feel totally untethered, and they're hanging out there. Even if they are in a family where mom and dad are there, sometimes mom and dad can be so adrift, going their separate ways, that they're not involved in their child's life. They feel surrounded by people and yet all by themselves, because nobody's any more invested in them than they are. Well, probably less interested in them than they are in what's going on in their little screen. It is pandemic. And there's three communities that God has provided for us to live in. However, that begs the question, why do we want to live in community? Why is loneliness bad? The scientific community has no explanation. They can just tell you, well, we evolved like other herding or pack animals, so we like to be together, and it helps us for hunting and social benefits. Absolutely no scientific evidence of that. They have no authority from which to speak on those types of subjects. Evolution cannot account for the feeling of loneliness. Why do you have that feeling? I'll tell you why. Because you're made in the image of God. And God isn't lonely. Why? Because he's three persons, one God. God lives in community. One God, three persons. We are his image bearers. In many ways, not always, many ways, we reflect him. He lives in community. Therefore, we live in community. That's why we have that longing. It's hardwired into us. And when we ride off the range, we're all alone, or we are immersed in our phones, we don't have genuine relationships, we feel kind of meh, which is the inevitable result of following the world system and not God's precepts for life. Always, 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 it'll turn out sour. Believe the lies of the devil and things go kafritz. Every single time. We are Charlie Brown. The devil lies. Just try it one more time. And off we go, and whoop, he pulls the football out, and there we are flat on our backs. Every single time. It started in the garden. Look at the order of things. God tells Adam and Eve, don't do that. Don't eat that tree. He didn't have a Brooklyn accent. That was just for people in the upper Northeast. God said, don't eat from that tree. And what happened? They listened to the lie of the devil and they believed him. Belief first, then thinking and actions. They believed the devil. They ate the fruit. And what's the consequence? Misery, shame. They knew they were naked. Everything was a mess. Hard work, thorns, painful, childbearing. That's the order of things. They believed the wrong object. And that's what our problem is, too. When we don't believe God's promises, when we believe the lies of the devil, off we go. And the consequence? Going to be pain. And when we don't live in real community, the ones, the institutions that God has established, it's going to be painful. What are the three that he has made for us? Family. Two, the local church. Well, look what we can say to these lonely millennials. Hey, we've actually got a club already built, and you're welcome. Hey, oh, by the way, there are terms of entrance. You need to repent and put your trust in Jesus Christ. Don't worry. We'll share a hot dish with you. But if you really want to enjoy this fellowship and all of its richness, you've got to become a club member. The gate, the entryway is Jesus Christ. You need to have your sins forgiven, a right relationship with God restored, and then welcome to the family of God, where people will serve you. They will love you. You can serve people. You can use your gifts. You can have real human relationships. You could actually, like, shake somebody's hand or do the Baptist back pat three times. One, two, three. Not looking at pixels. Real human relationship. What's the third family that God has created for us? It's the one that we get to long for. I believe it's Revelation chapter 7, starting at about verse 9. And look, I saw great multitudes from every tribe, every nation, every tongue. What were they doing? They were praising the Lamb. No more night. No more the imagery. No more sadness. No more sorrow. He's going to wipe away our tears. You get to be in that scene. That's where you're going to hang for all of eternity if you're in the family of God. You get to be in that community. Look at what we have to offer the world that is lonely like a nobody's business, and yet another study to demonstrate. Here we sit. Here we sit with a great remedy and a great cure. All we need to do is open our mouths and share it. To Australia we go. Well, you know, you got to make a living. I appreciate ingenuity. This, not so much. A new suicide pod. I didn't know there was an old one. Unveiled in Australia, has a detachable coffin. Oh, listen how cheery this is. The pagans, they're so thoughtful, aren't they? In the near future, people may be able to step inside of an all-inclusive suicide pod that not only gets the job done, but also provides the very capsule in which people can be buried. So you can take your own life and then be buried right on the spot. It's a twofer. The death pod, referred to as a glorified gas chamber, was first envisioned in 2012. It contains canisters of liquid nitrogen, which is released when activated by the person inside the capsule within the pod, causing oxygen levels to plummet to very low levels and starving the individual of the air you need to live. Sounds charming, doesn't it? The capsule is then detached from the pod and serves as a coffin for the occupant. Hold on. It just keeps getting darker. The capsule was unveiled at the Disrupting Death Workshop in Queensland, Australia. Oi. And promised people that it will kill them with style and euphoria. You know, that's like saying you're going to light somebody on fire, but you're going to do it with matches that are designer. You're going to get burned up with style. You'd go, well, you're going to have a head-on collision in a Mercedes-Benz. Yeah, but it's a head-on doing 70, and that you can dress it up, but it's still death. Yeeks. People are promised that they will experience an elegant, almost euphoric death when using the pod. I don't think so. Hebrews 2, right around verse 14, if I'm not mistaken, there's a built-in fear of death, and you can dress it up, but taking your life is not God's will for you. Oy, indeed. This is Wretched Radio. My special guest today is Dr. John MacArthur. Sir, what is the issue with the Masters Academy International?
The issue with TMAI is very simple. Biblical training. Training men to be the kinds of pastors that are defined and described in the New Testament.
Fascinating, sir, but there are so many ministries who encourage us to do acts of charity internationally.
I mean, it's fine to support philanthropy or some feeding of poor people or caring for children that have needs. But at the end of the day, the impact on a nation has to come from the pastors and leaders. So investing in that is making the maximum investment for the maximum impact.
Thank you, Dr. MacArthur. We're all out of time, or I'd love to ask you more questions. If you would like to support the mission of the Masters Academy International, training indigenous pastors to be biblical expositors, changing nations, you can do that at wretched.org/pastor.
On behalf of everyone here at Wretched, let me thank you. Thank you for your ongoing, generous support of Wretched. While the love of money most certainly is the root of all kinds of evil, it is nevertheless needed to pay the bills. And we are grateful that you've allowed Wretched to pay our bills for over a decade now. We don't take your support for granted. We're reaching more people than ever, and without being greedy, we want to reach even more. If you've never supported Wretched and you have the means, we would be grateful if you would prayerfully consider joining our gospel partners with your monthly tax-deductible support. Wretched.org/donate has all the details. Together, we can reach more and more people who are in desperate need of hearing the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The more you give, the more we're able to give away. Visit Wretched.org/donate today. Wretched.org/donate.
If you have been looking for a reason to sponsor your very own Tomorrow Club in Eastern Europe, perhaps this story from Max, the national director in Ukraine, will inspire you to visit tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Arsène, just 5 years old, escaped his home and came to the camp. His grandmother could not let him. She was cursing all Christians. His grandmother sadly passes away. So he kept coming. Not only that, he brought his parents and they repented. So this family gives the house where the grandma used to live to the church. And that's where the Tomorrow Club meets.
And that story is not a one-off. Families getting saved constantly through the Tomorrow Clubs in Eastern Europe. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club? 30 disciples, $30 per month. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Important dates in Christian history. 1517. Martin Luther posts his 95 Theses, a simple invitation for scholarly debate that inadvertently becomes a hinge of history. Luther's challenge to the sale of indulgences sparked the Reformation and changed the face of the world. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Romans 1, paging. Romans 1, found it. This is Wretched Radio. Oh, the degradation of a godless culture. It goes swirling down, doesn't it? And one of the signs that you're in a post-Christian civilization. We worship the creation and not the creator. Let us continue spanning the globe and go to India, but this is not the only country that is starting to give environmental personhood. That's right. The environment is a people just like us. Funny, I thought it was
a thing.
I thought it was a thing here all this time. Here it's we are sitting on a tree.
So those weird jokes and voices right we here. Make in cartoons.
I'm sitting on a person apparently, and my desk is a person, and your automobile apparently is a person too. Talk really about confusion. One. This isn't just India, by the way. Romans 1. If you've ever read Romans 1 and you wonder, well, who is God talking about here? Who are these people? Not Jerry Seinfeld. It's anybody who wants to reject God, any civilization, any group of people or person that does that will begin swirling down, down, down until it gets to sexual depravity and perversion of the worst sort. But one of the signs is that we start worshiping the stuff and not the one who actually made it. It's brain confusion. It is the continued swirling effect of the fall on the human brain. All of creation groans. That means us too. Should rivers have the same legal rights as humans? A growing number of voices say yes. In early July, Bangladesh became the first country to grant all of its rivers the same legal status as humans. From now on, its rivers will be treated as living entities in a court of law. The only problem is they just have to get there. That's all. So the river, or does the court go to the river? Because the river doesn't have, you know, that reminds me of a Bible verse.
Does the river call Uber to?
104 hours of private quiet time last night. Oh, great. Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk. Okay, it's near the end of the Old Testament. Was reading the book of Habakkuk. If you haven't read your Old Testament minor prophets on occasion, Hosea, Joel, Amos, you really should spend some time because, wow, did the prophets ever talk fiercely? Habakkuk. What did I say? Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi. Okay, I'll get there. Now, a lot of radio programs, the host would actually prepare this in advance and have it.
Yeah.
Well, silly rabbit. Who said you're listening to that? This really is one of my favorite books in the Old Testament. It's the prophet's question. It starts out in chapter 1. Lord, how long shall I cry? What is going on? Things are going rotten here. He looks at the surroundings, the culture. It is falling. Violence is before me. Strife, contention, it's everywhere. What's the deal? Asks the prophet. And then the Lord gives one of my favorite replies. Look. Look among the nations and watch. Be utterly astounded, for I will work in your days which you would not believe, though it were told you. And you go, oh, good, some relief. He's going to do something really cool. Verse 6.
from raising up the Chaldeans, the nastiest of the nasty, a bitter and hasty nation which marches through the breadth of the earth to possess dwelling places that are not theirs. They're terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity proceed from themselves. Now they're just going to take you over. What? Yeah, God's doing that because it shows him to be great, that he's keeping his promise to Abraham, that he's keeping his promise to Moses. Moses, if your people obey my commandments and statutes, I'll take care of them. If they don't, I'll send these types of people to you. And then in his promise to Abraham, he returns the people and rescues them from the wicked, awful Chaldeans and the Assyrians and the Babylonians and the Medo-Persians and the Greeks and the Romans. And still to this day, that land exists, doesn't it, with a Jewish people. So then the prophet sees it, still isn't exactly thrilled about it, but concludes, nevertheless, here's the conclusion of the book, though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, though they labor for the olive and it's going to fail, the fields yield no food, the flock cut off from the fold, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. No matter how bad things get, I'm going to rejoice. This is the day the Lord has made, even when it's a total stinker. And I'm going to rejoice because he was bowing to God's sovereignty. Todd, what does that have to do with the book of Romans? I got distracted. So this is, I think, in chapter 3. He's talking about people who make idols, who don't worship the true and the living God. And he asks a rhetorical question, what good are they? They can't even make themselves to the altar. You carve out this piece of wood, and it can't even do anything. You make it, and you say that it's got power, but you're the one who had to make it. How does it get power? You've got more power than the stick that you just whittled. These things are worthless objects. Now, I know that doesn't fly very well these days. Maybe it was in chapter 2. Nevertheless, yes, got it right here. Found it. Verse 18. What profit is the image that its maker should carve it? The molded image, a teacher of lies, that the maker of its mold should trust in it. Just total mockery right here. To make mute idols. Woe to him who says to wood, awake, to silent stone, arise, it shall teach. Behold, it's overlaid with gold and silver. You make it fancy, yet in it there is no breath at all. It's just a thing. It's got no power. In Bangladesh, we're making it a person. The river is considered as our mother, said Mohammed Abdul Mateen, General Secretary of Bangladesh something or another, a Dhaka-based environmental group. Following the ruling, anyone accused of harming the rivers can be taken to court by the new government-appointed National River Conservation Commission. You can be tried and delivered because you harmed your own mother. Okay, springs are going to come flying out of my head. The river is now considered by law, by code, a living entity, so you'll have to face the consequence by law if you do anything that hurts the mother. There are other countries originally introduced. What a shocker. University of Southern California law professor Christopher D. Stone, 1974 book titled, Should Trees Have Standing?
See what he did right there with the pun.
Toward legal rights for natural objects, arguing that if an environmental entity is given legal personality, it cannot be owned and has the right to appear in court. And what does the Bible say in contradistinction to that? All this stuff, it's yours, humans. Take care of it. Use it for your enjoyment, but take care of it. Don't abuse it, because I'm giving it to you on loan. Completely the opposite of the world's thinking. Completely. Traditionally, here's what the environmentalists say. Nature has been subject to a Western-conceived legal regime of property-based ownership. That means an owner has the right to modify their features, their natural features, or to destroy them at will. That can't be. Yeah, actually, it can be. That's why God made the stuff for us to have mastery over, to improve it, to subdue it, and to use it for our betterment. And if we choose to chop down a tree so that I can have a piece of paper that contains the wackiness of the world on it, so be it. Because the tree should be used for the betterment of people. Does that give us license to abuse? No, it doesn't. We love the planet, but we don't worship it. By the way, Ecuador, 2008, same sort of deal. New Zealand, congrats, 2017. Legal rights to our river. Toledo, Ohio, passed the Lake Erie Bill of Rights, recognizing the rights of nature. So don't hurt the lake. No, look, don't throw garbage into the lake. I get that. But because we want to take care of what God has given to us, not because it has equal status or personhood. What a world. What a world. I guess this would be good news. Great Britain, teen pregnancy rate falls 42.6%. Now, here's the punchline. And this is, again, if this is accurate, if this is right, if there is indeed a connection, the world lies, God tells the truth. Do you know why people believe that the teen pregnancy rate has fallen in Great Britain? Is it because they're passing out more birth control? No. Is it because they are giving more money to, is it Marie Stopes? That's their version of Planned Parenthood there. No. Is it because they are enhancing and embellishing and spending more money on their sex ed programs? No, actually, it's just the opposite. They've cut all of those things, and the teen pregnancy rate fell 42.6%. From the story, this is from LifeSite News. With the government cuts in sex ed funding, teen pregnancies in England have fallen to their lowest level since 1969. The statistics show teen pregnancy rates diminished the most in those areas where secular sex ed budgets were most aggressively cut. Well, isn't that the cuckoo kookiest thing you've ever heard? Just a reminder, the world lies. The consequences, always bad. It is only God's word that tells the truth, and when we obey it, the consequences are always good. The difference between darkness and light, lies and truth. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.